This is Audible.
Less Than Three Press presents A Matter of Disagreement by E.E. Ottoman. Read for you by Michael Stellman. Andreas scowled at himself in the mirror. The suit he was wearing was the latest fashion. Dark green silk waistcoat and jacket, fine black breeches, white silk stockings, linen shirt and cravat. Embroidery was the trend this year, and his jacket and waistcoat were embroidered with a motif of leaves and vines in black and silver. His shirt had wide ruffled cuffs of silk, and he straightened them a little, and then reached up to straighten the gold-rimmed spectacles that perched on his nose. He frowned at his reflection again. Andrea had never been a particularly tall man, and the last few years of hiding in his library and avoiding the regimen of horseback riding, weapons training, and hunting his brother loved so much had given him a decidedly round figure. Husky, he told himself. But husky or no, what he was not was the tall and slender build most in vogue at court, which was just great. Not only would people spend the entire evening gossiping and dropping barely disguised barbs about his refusal to marry and his life of scholarship, but they would also get to poke fun at his appearance as well. Poor, ugly, foolish Lord Ashcroft de Bourbon. Not the soldier his brother was, and not the politician his father had been. Andrea turned away from the mirror and stalked across the room. The party was the second of the season, after the gala ball at the royal palace. It was hosted by the House de la Marche. Andrea watched the huge three-story building, its two wings extending out from the main body of the house, with immaculate lawns and gardens stretching out around it. He wondered who the Marquis de la Marche had needed to kill in order to get second slot on the season's social roster. Andrea hoped it had involved groveling. The man was the most condescending and arrogant bastard. His fists clenched in his lap, and Andrea forced himself to relax. He was here as a guest, to support Mathis in whatever scheme he was trying for this time. He was also going to be one of hundreds at this party. The idea that he'd end up even in the same room as the Marquis was laughable. It was probably for the best. The only thing that had kept Andrea from punching him this long was that they had yet to actually meet face to face. Why had he allowed Mathis to talk him into this? The carriage stopped and Andrea climbed out. The gravel courtyard in front of the house was full of servants wearing the colors of the House de la Marche, mixing with footmen, drivers, and manservants from different noble houses and newly arrived guests. Ash! Andrea turned to see Mathis striding across from the house towards him. Mathis cut a handsome figure in dark blue and black, enhanced by the crisp whiteness of his shirt and cravat, high around his throat. His dark hair was swept back from his face with a little bit of a wave, unlike Andrea's tangle of curls. "I was expecting you 20 minutes ago." Mathis settled his hand heavily on Andrea's shoulder. "Primping in front of the mirror, were we?" Andrea snorted. "Hardly." "Well, come on." Mathis pulled him in the direction of the house. "I want you to meet Lady Amélie de la Marche." So this was the reason Mathis had made such a fuss out of both of them attending the party. They were the sole remaining members of the House of Bourbon-Maine, and an alliance of marriage between the illegitimate noble branch of Bourbon-Maine and the House de la Marche would be a great thing. Especially for Mathis' career. Mathis was a fine soldier, well thought of at court. He could go far on his own, but much further if Andrea would also be willing to ingratiate himself with the House de la Marche. Andrea stifled a sigh. He hated politics and parties. They stepped into the front room of the house, through which servants rushed back and forth, and guests meandered with drinks in hand, and Mathis turned right, pulling Andrea through the double doors thrown open into a ballroom overflowing with people. Tall windows looked out into the gardens, and at the far end of the room, Double glass doors had been opened, allowing the guests to wander outside. Servants circulated the room, holding trays with drinks and food on them, and the room was filled with the sounds of people laughing and talking to each other. Andrea wished he were anywhere else. "My lady," Mathis called. "I would like to introduce you to my brother, Lord Ashcroft de Bourbon. Ash, this is Lady Emily de la Marche." She was tiny, thin, and with a fine bone structure that made her look much younger than she probably was. She was wearing a pretty light blue silk dress, with a neckline just low enough to be fashionable, but not so low to be revealing. Cream lace paneled the front, encircled by embroidered pink flowers, with more lace at the sleeves. Her fine blonde hair was swept up with silver pins in the shape of songbirds. She curtsied. "Lord Ashcroft?" Andrea bowed. "Lady Emily." Mathis looked at them. "You both should speak a few minutes. I am going to get us drinks. I will be but a moment." He darted off, both Emily and Andrea watching him retreat before turning back to each other. "You teach, do you not?" She took a sip from the champagne flute in her hand. Yes. Andrea resisted the urge to reach up and fiddle with his glasses, but only just. "Mostly, though, I write and look after the library." "At Colleen?" "Yes, at the university at Colleen." The conversation lapsed into awkward silence. "It must be fascinating working at such a place, for a learned gentleman such as yourself." "I enjoy it. It is the perfect place to do my research on historic languages and literature." "And that must be..." Emily hesitated for a brief second, before pushing valiantly on. "Fascinating. What do you focus on in particular for this book?" "The use of magic to animate." "You see, it is commonly believed that only through combining spellcraft with machinery, such as clockwork, can we achieve true animation with things such as message birds, but I hope to show through a close reading of ancient texts..." A hand fell heavily on his shoulder. "Talking about your research again," Mathis smiled at Amelie. "He does like to go on and on, if you let him." He pushed a glass of wine into Andrea's hand. "It was quite interesting." Emily did look a little relieved at Mathis's interruption, though. "If I can steal you away from my brother for a moment," Mathis took her hand, "I would love the honor of a dance, my lady." She glanced over at Andrea, then smiled up at Mathis. "I would love to dance, my lord." Mathis whisked her off, back the way he had come, where, Andrea assumed, another ballroom had been set up for dancing. Left alone, Andrea sipped his wine and scanned the room for anyone he knew and at least didn't hate. The only people he spotted, though, were the Countess de Chalon and Godefroy de Chalant, both of whom he made a point of dealing with only under duress. He scanned the room again, but no other faces jumped out at him. Had he really been away from the court so long that everyone was a stranger? Draining his glass, Andrea went in search of another. Hailing down a servant with a tray of drinks in hand, Andrea swapped out his empty glass for a full champagne flute and headed out toward the gardens. Maybe he could find a quiet corner to tuck himself away and drink in peace. Men and women strolled across the lawn chatting with each other, and a group of young ladies ran giggling toward the hedge maze, which lay at the bottom of a small hill, away from the house. Andrea took several sips of his champagne as he turned in a slow half-circle, looking for some place secluded to sit. Off to his right, a small building caught his eye. It was a little ways from the house and made of stone with a domed metal roof. Andrea squinted at it, taking several unconscious steps forward. It looked a bit like an observatory. The building was circular and two stories tall. There was a small wooden door set into the side. Andrea tried the handle, expecting it to be locked, and was surprised to find it opened under his hand. After a moment's hesitation, he ducked inside. He stepped into a large, rather bare, round room, a few tables set up here and there, piled with machinery, and crates stacked to one side. There were a few small windows, slits set high up, that allowed a little of the fading sunlight to seep through, pooling on the floor. In the center of the room was an iron spiral staircase leading up. Andrea took a sip of his champagne, debating on what to do next. This was likely not an area of the Marsh estate open to partygoers. At the same time, the door had been unlocked. Andrea started for the spiral staircase. He'd just take a quick peek up at the second floor, and then go back to the party, or at least go back to the gardens. Maybe there would be some place in the maze he could hide. The steps were steep. Andrea gripped the railing with his free hand and wished he was in better shape. Maybe he should get out of the library more often and start going horseback riding again. He'd enjoyed that a lot back when he'd been in the habit of doing it. Maybe after he finished the book. His head cleared the opening of the second-story floor, revealing another large circular room. This one dominated by the lower half of the biggest telescope Andrea had ever seen. There was quite a large one used for research at the university, but this one was huge, gleaming brass set on top of a pillar of interlocking cogs and levers so it could be turned and adjusted. Just looking at it from the top of the stairs, Andrea could tell it was incredibly sensitive. To be turned or adjusted down to inches or maybe even less, the rest of it pointed upward towards the domed ceiling, which could be opened up via cranks and pulleys attached to the far wall. Andrea tore his gaze away from the massive telescope and surveyed the rest of the room. There were two glass doors leading onto a balcony he hadn't been able to see from the front of the building. Next to the doors was a large desk overflowing with papers and charts. Bending over the desk was a man. He was dressed in dark brown breeches and matching dark brown vest over a white shirt. Nothing very fine and everything rumpled enough to make Andrea think he hadn't changed recently. Maybe not even today. Not a party guest then. A research assistant by the look of him. Andrea climbed the last few steps up into the room. The man turned and stared at him for a moment, as if not really seeing him, and then shook his head. Green eyes focused, and the man smiled, warm and friendly.
"I'm sorry, my lord. Can I help you? Are you lost?"
"Just looking for some place to hide, and admiring your telescope." Andrea smiled back, but then hesitated. "I hope I'm not intruding. I don't mean to snoop, but the door was unlocked."
"It's fine." The man's smile widened in response to Andrea's own, and he reached up, undoing the leather tie that held back his hair. Andrea watched the deep brown curls with dark red highlights fall across the man's shoulder before he pulled them back and tied them more firmly in place. He was taller than Andrea, with just the outline of a beard along his jaw and chin that hovered somewhere between goatee and really thick stubble, as was fashionable right now. His skin lacked the pallor of most scholars, including Andrea himself, and was instead dark enough to mark him as someone who spent some time out under the sun. He looked to be about Andrea's own age, except for the fine laugh lines around his eyes when he smiled. Andrea looked away, focusing on the telescope.
"It really is magnificent." He took a step towards it. "I've never seen one so large before. The one at the university is considered state-of-the-art, but I think it falls several places behind this." He reached out to run his hand across the tiny knobs on the side of the eyepiece that would adjust that as well. "They must have used the technology from mechanical clocks to design it," he thought.
"It is unique."
Andrea could feel the other man's eyes on him, although he didn't look around.
"Are you an astronomer, my lord?"
"No." Andrea could feel his lips quirk up in a grin. "Just curious by nature, and all the new sciences fascinate me." It's a pity that it's not quite dark enough out for me to give you a chance to use it.
Oh, would you?
Andrea looked up at that, meeting the other man's amused eyes and easy smile. The professor at the university never allowed me to play with any of their toys. The man laughed at that, a rich, deep sound that made Andrea smile in return. A thought occurred to him, though, making his smile fade. But I don't want to get you into trouble.
I can't imagine it would.
The man reached up to scratch along his jaw in thought. Just another 10 minutes and it should be dark enough. I can let you have a little look, and then you can go back to the party. Feeling a mixture of excitement at getting to use the telescope, and disappointment that he'd have to leave afterwards, Andrea nodded. The man bent to fiddle with some of the levers at the base of the telescope, before straightening up and turning back to Andrea, a look of chagrin on his face.
I'm sorry, I've been horribly rude. I do not know your name, my lord.
Andrea hesitated for a split second before holding out his hand.
Andrea, he said, and you don't have to call me my lord, just Andrea is fine.
Andrea. The man's hand was larger than Andrea's and rough with calluses, the feeling of which Andrea liked more than he probably should have. That's a very old name, is it not? Andrea blinked at him.
Most people say it's a girl's name. I very rarely meet someone who knows that at one point, many hundreds of years ago, it was more common to give it to a boy.
The laughter lines crinkled around the man's eyes as he smiled.
I studied fairly seriously when I was younger. My mother loved history.
Andrea released the man's hand with some reluctance. She always thought it was a beautiful name for a boy. Of course, his father had hated the name and forbade her from giving it to either of her sons. His father had stopped having any power over Andrea's life the day he kicked him out, though, and thus Andrea could take any name he wanted.
It is a beautiful name, the man agreed.
Gregory. He placed one hand on his own chest. Or Greg, if you'd like. But generally, people only call me that when they are feeling especially exasperated with my bad behavior.
I can't imagine you behaving all that badly.
Andrea raised one eyebrow. Was he flirting?
He was, wasn't he?
Oh, God. Gregory laughed again. Not often, or at least I try. My mother would probably tell you a different story, but then to her I will always be a little boy getting into trouble. It will be dark enough soon, I think. He stretched his arms over his head and then sighed. Would you like to go out on the balcony in the meantime? It's a little stuffy in here.
Of course.
Andrea nodded and then followed after Gregory, as he opened the glass doors and stepped out onto the balcony.
I wish I had known you were up here. I would have brought you some champagne.
It's all right. I'm not overly fond of it anyway. Gregory leaned against the balcony railing, tilting his face up to catch the cool breeze that was ruffling the leaves of the trees a little way off, further from the house. Andrea could hear the faint sound of people laughing and talking, with the distant notes of music coming from the house. He took a sip of his own champagne.
"So, what do you do when you're not attending fancy parties?" Gregory turned to him. With that easy smile Andrea was beginning to associate with him.
You spoke of the university. Were you referring to the university at Colleen? Do you teach?
I don't teach as much as research.
Andrea leaned against the railing, resting his elbows on the cool stone, and toyed with the stem of the champagne flute. I study ancient languages and literature, and work as something of a librarian at the university library. I'm writing a book, actually, on the use of magic to animate.
Really?
Gregory raised his eyebrows, turning to watch Andrea. I work on spellcraft and mechanical animation. A bitter taste snuck into the back of Andrea's throat, and he swallowed it down, taking a long gulp of his champagne. Of course Gregory worked on mechanical animation. He worked for Delamarche, after all. Still, they'd been having such a nice conversation. He'd been enjoying himself for once.
Yes, well, I want to argue that the use of spellcraft to animate objects far outdates our use of machinery.
Andrea looked down at the glass in his hands, instead of at Gregory.
As a close reading of such volumes as Livre de la Sorcière reveals.
You are Ashcroft de Bourbon. Andrea finally looked up at Gregory, whose mouth had flattened out into a straight, unhappy line.
Yes, that is my legal name. He drained his glass.
So tell me. Gregory straightened, crossing his arms over his chest. Since you didn't see fit to respond to my private letter before writing another one of your scathing articles, what do you hope to accomplish by attacking the entire field of mechanical animation?
Andrea's eyes widened and then narrowed. Léon Gregory de la Marche the Sixth, Marquis de la Marche, I presume.
He should have known, should have figured it out sooner. The Marquis de la Marche was, after all, only one of the most famous men in the empire. The Marquis de la Marche nodded, expression hard, eyes cold. It angered Andrea all the more.
You want to know what I hope to gain?
Andrea stalked forward until they were standing so close together they nearly touched. A little respect for people who might, shockingly, not do what you do. Because that is the problem with mechanical animation as a field. In order to legitimize itself as the one true way to use spellcraft, it must delegitimize every other way as backwards or old-fashioned.
That is not the same as what you are doing?
The Marquis's eyes flashed with open anger now.
Mechanical animation is a new field with its foot barely in the door. Nothing even close to the level of academic legitimacy of just about every other field. And it is flawed, I know. Maybe some of us have been a little rash and too far-reaching in our zeal to see it succeed. But you, instead of trying to mold and nurture it into something great, have made your entire career out of trying to tear it down. Explain to me how that isn't purely reactionary.
Andrea balled his hands into fists.
Oh, please, you act like I'm kicking you when you're down. Mechanical animation is the darling of the empire. It doesn't need to be nurtured like some fragile newborn. It needs to be curtailed before you kill off every other discipline that has anything even remotely to do with the study of spellcraft.
The Marquis's lips curled.
Not reactionary, then. Just jealous.
Andrea stared at him, then turned as fast as he could, stalking back into the room with the telescope and heading for the stairs. He went down them two at a time, perhaps faster than was safe, heading blindly for the door and out into the night air. He stormed back towards the house and through the open doors into the ballroom.
Ash!
Andrea caught sight of Mathis with Emily on his arm.
Where are you going?
Home. Andrea kept going, through the ballroom, into the hall and out the front door, hailing down the closest footman.
Get my carriage.
The man bowed.
Yes, Lord Ashcroft.
A few minutes later, he was in his carriage, heading away from the house and back towards the capital, where his and Mathis' townhouse was. He let out a shaking sigh, finally watching out the window, as the huge estate house was swallowed into the darkness behind them. Slowly, his hands in his lap unclenched, and Andrea reached up to run them across his face. He'd made a fool of himself, let his temper get the better of him, damn it. He'd always hoped he'd be collected and coolly cutting when they finally met face to face. Instead, he'd traded a few jabs and then stormed off in a huff. He'd been having such a good time before that, too. Andrea's hands clenched again. He wasn't going to think about that. He wasn't going to think about the strange sadness that filled his chest at the memory of talking excitedly about the telescope. Instead, he thought about his three research assistants, who he could barely afford to pay. At least he had Mathis and the rest of his family's funds to come crawling back to, even if Mathis had made it quite clear Andrea wasn't allowed to spend the family assets on his research, only his own money. As long as Andrea resided at Colleen and continued to participate in academia, his family's money was close to him. Still, in the end, when the money ran out, which would be soon, he'd have somewhere to run to, even if it was back to a brother who thought him a fool for being a scholar in the first place. Victor, Julianne, and Sasha were not even that lucky. It shouldn't be this way. Andrea looked out the window again, watching the darkness pass by, and rested his cheek across the cool glass of the carriage window.
So, why didn't you tell me you and the Marquis de la Marche were involved in some sort of academic feud?
Mathis was obviously angry. His voice was calm, but still held that trembling undercurrent of rage. I didn't think it was important. Andrea didn't look up from his desk. He had a headache and didn't want to talk about this.
You didn't think it was important?
Mathis's voice rose until he was almost shouting, and he began to pace back and forth.
Emily broke off her engagement 2 months ago with the Duke de Cambus, who she had been betrothed to since they were both 6.
I like Emily. We get along well. I can imagine her being a very pleasant companion to set up a household with. More importantly, marrying into the House de la Marche will finally legitimize our family name. And now I find you are having some sort of spat with the very man I will be asking for Emily's hand?
What makes you think he would have given it to you anyway? Andrea snapped back. House de la Marche can have their pick of any of the eligible partners from any noble house they want.
We are an illegitimate line, descended from the royal mistress 100 years ago. He would not have chosen you to marry his sister anyway.
Well, he most certainly won't now.
All the anger seemed to drain out of Mathis, and he sank down into a chair opposite Andrea.
Whatever this thing between you two is, do you think you could try to fix it?
I don't think...
Come on. Mathis leaned across the table. Whatever it is, you can let it go. Be the bigger man, Ash.
I'll talk to him, Andrea said, after hesitating for a long moment. Voice tight. I'll be civil. Try to work it out.
Good.
Mathis stood and straightened his jacket, before clapping Andrea on the shoulder.
I'll see you for supper, then. I have a meeting to attend.
With that, he was gone, and Andrea watched the door swing shut behind him. He lowered his face into his hands and sighed. Truth be told, he felt awful about the party the night before. It might do him good to apologize either way. He pulled a fresh sheet of paper towards him and picked up his pen, composing a quick letter, before going to find someone to bring it around to the de la Marche estate. The coffee house was bustling, but still the Marquis de la Marche was easy to spot in a dark red jacket, waistcoat and black breeches, with a fine linen shirt and cravat, high boots, and silk stockings. He had his hair held back with a silver clip. Andrea thought from the doorway that he'd looked better the previous day, all work-rumpled with curls escaping to fall across his face. He clamped down hard on those thoughts. Not this man. Not now, not ever. Andrea moved across the room, stopping next to the table. Marquis de la Marche, he bowed, all strict formality. Thank you for agreeing to meet with me.
Lord Ashcroft. The Marquis also stood and bowed.
Please. He gestured to the chair across the table.
Sit.
Andrea took the offered seat. I want to apologize, he said, reaching to pull off the black gloves that he wore to complement his austere black outfit. The way I acted last night was childish, and it does not do either of us credit.
And I, the Marquis lowered his head a fraction as he spoke. I should not have attacked you as I did. I let my temper get the better of me.
As did I. Andrea folded his hands on the table. The Marquis's apology was unexpected, but not unwelcome. His opinion of the Marquis went up. He'd come here because Mathis had wanted it, but maybe they could make amends and have a more cordial relationship. He hadn't realized he might like that until now. He took a breath. So let us start again. I did receive your letter, and I have read it over carefully. While you make some extremely valid arguments, I found the overall tone to be missing the point I have been trying to make. Further, having this conversation limited to merely a private correspondence also undermines what I am trying to do, which I believed to be your intent in writing me in the first place. Am I wrong? Yes. The Marquis's brows furrowed into a frown, and he restrained himself with an effort. I was attempting to see if we could reach some kind of understanding, as one gentleman to another, instead of resorting to mudslinging via the academic and political press. I was not, nor do I intend to do any sort of mudslinging. Andrea clenched his hands into fists and then, with great effort, managed to relax them again. You and others who practice mechanical animation must stop with this assertion that yours is the only way to practice spellcraft, and stop discrediting or dismissing others' work. That has not been, nor ever was, our intent. Oh, really? Andrea raised his eyebrows. Lord de Blas wrote, and I quote, "It is clear that mechanical animation will shortly replace the antiquated and less evolved methods of spellcraft, although scholars of the past have claimed to be able to animate objects without the use of machinery. These were no doubt mere illusions of a more primitive mind, and the scholars who cling desperately to such assertions are likewise deluding themselves." That came out in the issue of Royal Revue Academique, the issue after I announced my preliminary findings in the same publication. The Marquis had the good grace at least to look embarrassed. Lord de Blois can be overzealous and lacking in common sense. He does not speak for all of us. He sounded sincere, but Andrea really didn't care. Even if the Marquis thought Lord de Blois did not speak for mechanical animation, the fact remains that he published as if he did. I quoted from your most recent article. Andrea's hands clenched together tightly in front of him. Mechanical animation represents the pinnacle of spellcraft theory and practices. It is far more versatile and complex than earlier forms of spellcraft, and carries with it the unique ability to create moving, functioning tools out of what was once inanimate and powered only by man. With the advances already made in the field and those on the horizon, it will soon become unnecessary to continue less fruitful avenues of academic inquiry into other forms of spellcraft. I still stand by most of that, the Marquis said. Andrea wanted nothing so much as to hit him. Can't you see the innate problem in such a statement? He asked instead. Maybe we have been too harsh, but mechanical animation is the way of the future. Andrea stared at the Marquis. He was so confident, so sure that he was right, that for the first time Andrea thought maybe he would never be able to get through to the Marquis, or any of the rest, that what they were doing was wrong. Maybe he should just give up. We will have to agree to disagree about that. His voice came out tight and strained. He wanted to stand and leave, but he told Mathis he'd try. How is your sister? He asked. The Marquis's eyebrow rose. She is fine, a little tired after the party last night. My brother introduced us at the party, Andrea explained, and the Marquis's face tightened. Brother? Lord Mathis de Bourbon? Yes. The Marquis closed his eyes and took a long, deep breath. When he opened his eyes again, he seemed almost sad. So this is why you wanted to talk to me. Your brother's intention towards my sister. I thought when you wrote me that you'd finally wanted to work this out face to face, but if not for some political maneuver on the part of your house, You would be more than happy to continue this back and forth via the press.
Yes. Andrea's own mouth flattened into an unhappy line. In that moment, he wished he had any other answer to give the Marquis, but he didn't, and he would not make things worse by lying.
I can't. The Marquis stood. I cannot continue this right now, I'm sorry. He gave a short bow to Andrea and turned on his heel, heading for the door.
Wait! Andrea half rose from his own chair, but the Marquis did not even turn around. Andrea watched until he was gone out the door and onto the street before sitting back and banging his fist into the tabletop, and then dropping his head forward into his hands. The university was a welcome relief from the city. Even swarming with students, Andrea felt a sense of peace wash over him as he passed through the gates in the high stone wall that surrounded the campus. He ignored the students and professors in their academic robes and headed straight for the library. The library wasn't as big as the one attached to the monastery of Navarre Mar, but it was second. A huge marble-fronted building, 3 stories high, with a slate-tiled roof. The front sported a short flight of marble steps up to 3 archways, which all led into a half-circular walkway. The library's front door was set to the left, and a large bust of the founder, looking strangely grim, was front and center. Andrea avoided the disapproving gaze of his predecessor and pulled open the heavy wooden doors that led into the library proper. His office was on the 3rd floor. Andrea ignored the marble-arched doorways through which he could see the reading rooms, each wall lined floor to ceiling with books, the center of each room filled with row upon row of research tables. There were a few academics and some very industrious students already sitting at the tables, bent over heavy volumes. Andrea headed up the marble staircase at the far left of the front hall. His office was a tiny, closet-sized space with 1 window. It was usually jammed full of books and papers as well. When he stepped through the door, however, he was assaulted by order, neatness, and a distinct smell of lemon soap. All of his books had been stacked on the shelves that lined the walls, and his papers were organized across his tiny desk.
"Mr. Golovkin," Andrea said. The small man, in only his shirt sleeves and waistcoat, straightened up from Andrea's desk, turning towards him.
"Lord Ashcroft,"
he bowed. "You've been busy, I see. You didn't have to do this."
"You said I could use your office while you were away," Sasha said, brushing dark curls out of his too pretty face. "I thought it would be only fair to do a little straightening in repayment."
"You do almost all my research and all my translations. That's payment enough." Andrea gave him a small smile before sitting behind his desk. Sasha fidgeted in front of him.
"Most scholars would not have allowed me such liberties with their space, sir. I am grateful for the opportunity to further my own research."
The last bit came out almost as a whisper, and Sasha looked down at the floor, biting his lip. As always, Andrea wondered about the nobles and scholars Sasha had worked for before coming to him. Research assistants were not technically servants, so beating them would, legally speaking, be assault. Still, Sasha was physically small, a member of the lower classes and foreign-born, so the law would probably not have counted for much.
"I've told you before, you are welcome to use my office any time while I am not here." Andrea waved his hand. "I do not want your work for me negatively impacting your own research."
Sasha was also the best research assistant he'd ever had. When the money ran out, Andrea had sworn he would keep Sasha on the longest.
"Thank you," Sasha bowed again, still biting his lip and now looking close to tears.
"Are you all right?" Frowning, Andrea stood and came around the desk, wondering what had happened in his absence.
"I am so sorry, sir, but I can no longer work for you."
Sasha was close to tears, his voice trembling with it. You are the best employer I have ever had, and I know I am abandoning you and abandoning the work, but I have no choice. I am so sorry. Please forgive me.
Stop. Andrea grasped his shoulders, trying to make Sasha look at him and failing.
Talk to me. What happened? What is going on?
Sasha took a long, shuddering breath. You know, Maddie and I had a child 3 months ago, he said, and Andrea nodded, smiling a little.
Trust me, I remember.
He hadn't seen Sasha that happy since he'd gotten married, and the baby was an adorable little thing, just like his parents.
It was not an easy birth, and Maddie has not been able to go back to work since, and things have slipped behind, and now...
He took a long breath, as if bracing himself for a physical blow.
We have been evicted from our apartments. You know I love the work. I love working here. This has been an amazing opportunity, but I need to support my family.
Of course you do. Andrea's body had gone numb. He had no money to offer them. They had been two of the nicest, sweetest people he'd ever met, now with a baby, and they had been kicked out of their home because he had failed to provide for them. Sasha's loyalty to him and to the work had prevented him from getting a better-paying position. Even now his bank account was almost empty, and the family money unavailable to him as long as he was involved in his research. Sasha, he said, trying to keep his voice level and calm. Do you, Maddie, and the baby have anywhere to stay in the meantime, while you search for work and other accommodations? The way Sasha looked at the floor told him they did not. Well then, Andrea moved to his desk and pulled out a piece of paper and a writing pen. You will stay at my family's hunting lodge. It is not far from here, and should do nicely for the three of you.
Lord Ashcroft, we can't. Sasha was already shaking his head. It's not that I don't appreciate your generous offer, but we couldn't be that much of an imposition. Besides,
you don't own the lodge, your brother does, and he refuses to allow you to use any family assets for anything academic-related, including the care of your research assistants.
We can fend for ourselves.
Nonsense, you have a baby. I have a house, and I will not let you end up on the streets, even if it is only for a few nights' stay. Andrea held out a quickly scribbled letter of reference, which would allow them access to the lodge. Besides, let me take care of my brother. Mathis is many things, but he won't turn a young family and their 3-month-old child out into the cold. I consider you a friend. Sasha looked surprised and touched.
Thank you, I...
He bit his lip again.
Just for a few nights, then.
And stay. Andrea was the world's worst, most ungrateful bastard, but he really did think of Sasha as a friend, and one of the only people who believed in the work he did. Stay working for me a little longer. I will raise your salary as of today, and if it is not enough, you come to me. Promise me you will come to me and tell me it needs to be more.
I want to continue working here. Having access to the library and being able to do my own research is a dream.
Sasha looked as if admitting to it was a crime. But maybe it's time for me to stop. I am going to get us funding. Andrea's hands clenched into fists. I am going back to the capital and finding someone to fund us, I swear. You will be able to work here. You will not need to lay aside your research, even if I need to lay aside mine. He didn't know if he really meant that quite yet, but he'd do just about anything for the money they needed. Just give me 2 weeks, please. Still standing on the other side of the desk, Sasha nodded slowly, but his eyes were filled with doubt.
Ash.
Andrea looked up from yet another funding proposal as Mathis strode into his office.
Are you doing anything this evening?
No.
Andrea blinked at him.
Good.
Mathis turned towards the door. Now you're coming with me to a soiree at Lady Tusi's townhouse.
Another party? You know I don't like them. Mathis looked over his shoulder at Andrea.
Come on, it will be good for you. Besides, it's only a small party.
Mathis, no. I need to make other arrangements to go back to the university soon.
Please. Mathis pouted in a way that made Andrea wonder how Mathis could possibly be older than him.
Only for a few hours, Ash, and then you can come home and hide. It's just not good for the entire court to think of you as basically a hermit.
I am basically a hermit.
Come now, do your big brother a favor. I'm going to have to go back to the border soon, and I want to make as good an impression as possible while I'm here, for both of our sakes. Besides, the better you are known at court and court functions, the more likely it becomes that a noble house will want to fund your research.
You could fund my research.
Andrea didn't try to hide his bitterness, but they'd already had that fight twice since he'd returned from Colleen. Also, Mathis made a valid point. As much as he hated it, parties were one of the better ways to drum up interest in his research.
I'll come, but I'm only staying a few hours, you understand?
Mathis grinned and saluted before wandering away to start getting ready.
Oh, and wear something besides black. It's a party, not a funeral.
I don't need you to tell me how to dress.
Andrea ran one hand across his face and belatedly realized he had ink smeared across his forehead.
Time for a bath, then.
Lady Tusi's soirees were known as the height of culture within the capital. All the best minds within the intellectual and artistic circles were invited, along with select nobility. Andrea had not received an invitation, of course. He wasn't even sure how Mathis had. Lady Tusi's townhouse was large and spacious, with high-ceilinged rooms, sporting large windows, but there were still enough people there for Andrea to feel claustrophobic. The main attraction of the evening were the huge gilt cages of mechanical songbirds, made to carry messages in the little space in their chests. In the dining room, there was also a giant engine, a mass of cogs and gears, contained in a large frame of wood and gilt metal, which ran on a combination of spellcraft and electricity. The engine was Lord de Blois' pet project, his pride and joy. Andrea had read the half-dozen journal articles he'd written on it already, although, as of yet, it did not work well enough to power anything. Lord de Blois was sure it would revolutionize modern transportation. Andrea could hear Lord de Blois' piercing and nasal voice the moment he stepped through Lady Tusi's front door, and made sure to avoid the room with the engine in it at all costs. If there was one person within the study of mechanical animation's inner circle who would never pass up the opportunity to make cruel remarks at Andrea's expense, it was Lord de Blois. He ended up in one of the sitting rooms, standing against one wall, watching a group of ladies speaking and laughing together while taking up both of the settees. Groups of four or five gentlemen stood about the room, speaking with each other, smoking and drinking. Coming from a room to his left, Andrea could hear the tinkle of a harpsichord. He slumped further against the wall and fidgeted with one wide lace cuff peeking out of his dark blue jacket.
"You promised me a few hours." Mathis appeared at his side, pressing a glass of wine into his hands.
"And I will stay for that long. Even if it meant he might have to challenge the Lord de Blois to a duel before the night was out." Andrea clenched his jaw and straightened his spine.
"Good."
Mathis patted his shoulder, and then disappeared into the crowd. Andrea took a gulp of wine. Out of the corner of his eyes, he caught a glimpse of a tall figure in a striking dark brown jacket, made out of something suede-like, standing out in the sea of silk. Andrea stiffened, hand tightening around his wine glass. Of course he'd known that the Marquis de la Marche would be invited. He had just been praying he'd decided not to come. A young man in a dark gold silk jacket, dark hair tied neatly back from his face,
grasped the Marquis's arm and leaned close, saying something in a low voice. They both laughed, and Andrea did his best to try and melt into the wall. Another older gentleman approached the Marquis, and the younger man said something to the two of them that made all three laugh. Andrea took a gulp of his wine. Good. The longer the Marquis de la Marche was busy with others, the longer it would take him to realize Andrea was there. In fact, it was a very real possibility that they could go the entire evening without the Marquis realizing he was there at all. Andrea emptied his glass in one long gulp and went in search of another one. Fighting through the press of bodies, Andrea made it into the library with the harpsichord and servants offering drinks. He took another glass of wine. The library was even more crowded than the sitting room had been, so Andrea headed back the way he had come. He wedged himself against one of the windows and sipped his wine. After a minute, he felt eyes on him and turned his head a little to see the Marquis staring at him. Their eyes met, and the Marquis turned away with a frown. Andrea's free hand clenched at his side, the other tightening around his wine glass. The Marquis cut through the crowd, out of the room towards the door, and Andrea followed him without thinking. "Ah, Marquis!" Andrea halted when he heard the voice of Lord de Blois coming from where the Marquis was trying to enter the front hall. Sure enough, de Blois' tall, slim figure stood beside the Marquis, very close in fact.
"I had rather hoped you would allow me to demonstrate my engine prototype." Lord de Blois leaned in closer. "But I see you are just leaving. If you would like..."
His tone dropped and he reached out to grasp the Marquis's arm. He must have drunk quite a lot already.
"We could go back to my townhouse, and I could show you my latest prototype in private."
His voice pitched even lower, so now Andrea could barely hear it.
"I always wondered what you have..."
His eyes swept up and down the Marquis's form so blatantly, no one would have been able to miss his intent.
"Or don't have under those clothes."
Something ugly and far too familiar churned up Andrea's stomach at the sight. He might not have been the prettiest of men, but he was physically small, and for some, that had been enough. His hands clenched into fists again, his anger almost enough to propel him out into the hall. The Marquis's own hand wrapped around Lord de Blois' wrist so tightly, Andrea could almost see the bruises as they bloomed on Lord de Blois' pale skin. Lord de Blois let out a squeak of pain, eyes going big with sudden fear. "Remove your hand." The Marquis's expression was cold and hard, almost brittle. His tone was low and with a dangerous edge Andrea had never heard before and hoped never to hear directed at him. "Do not underestimate me, Lord de Blois. I can be quite the obstacle to your continued enjoyment of both the funds and prestige you now have. Remember that, and never touch my person so familiarly again." Lord de Blois fled as soon as the Marquis let go of his wrist, and the Marquis stalked further into the hall to collect his walking stick and hat.
"Marquis de la Marche,"
Andrea also stepped into the front, all more on instinct than anything else, since this was surely the worst time to speak with him. "I have nothing to say to you, Lord Ashcroft." The Marquis didn't turn around.
"I agreed to meet with you because my brother asked me to, but I had my own reasons to want to speak with you as well."
Andrea stared at his back and wished he'd turn around. "The conversation we had about the telescope, I enjoyed that. I'm not ready to just give in and pretend I'm all right with the way things are, but I don't want to fight with you either." That had not been the apology he had constructed in his head, but he found he was not sorry he'd said it. The Marquis turned, finally looking at him. "I won't be used, and I won't let my sister be used either. I will have nothing to do both professionally or socially with those who think otherwise." Andrea's mind flashed back to Lord de Blois' odious advances. "Neither my brother nor I am trying to take advantage of you or your sister." Your brother wishes to marry my sister simply because of her title. The Marquis's jaw was tight with anger, although it was not the same coldness he'd used on Lord de Blois. Of course he does. We are nobles. With a shake of his head, the Marquis turned away again, not even bothering to answer. My brother is very fond of your sister, and she seems to like him just fine. Andrea just kept talking, half expecting the Marquis to walk out the front door while he babbled. But in the end, their marriages, whether to each other or someone else, will be for political gain, and in that way, not completely sincere or without agenda. Because that is the way marriages between houses such as ours always are. It is practically inevitable. My brother has always known his marriage will be for political gain on both sides. The Marquis had not turned to face him, but he wasn't moving either. Andrea crossed his arms over his chest. As I'm sure your marriage will be as well. The Marquis laughed at that, but without much actual joy. I don't plan on marrying, and in truth, there are very few who would have me, I think. Andrea very much doubted that was actually true. Then that your sister does marry, and who, will be even more important. The Marquis spun then to face Andrea and advanced on him. Startled, Andrea backed up until his back touched the wall. Is there a reason? The Marquis ground out, now so close their chests almost touched, that you keep talking about my sister. I dislike this romantic nature of yours. Andrea brought one hand up to press against the Marquis's chest, trying to push him away with little to no affect. You make public statements about how backwards other disciplines are, and then appear surprised when people take offense or careers other than yours suffer. You speak as if my brother were attempting to besmirch your sister's honor for doing exactly what every noble family does, and then refuse to admit that all marriages amongst nobles are for profit and power, not affection. He finally managed to push the Marquis back enough for him to slip out between the Marquis's body and the wall. Is it such a crime to you that I would like to see things change and become different, to see new fields of study arise, and maybe want better for my sister than what her peers have to settle for? The Marquis straightened one of his lace cuffs. They stared at each other in the hallway of Lady Tusi's house, with the sounds of the party filtering out from the rooms behind them. It isn't a crime, Andrea said finally, rubbing one hand across his eyes. And like I said, my brother is genuinely fond of your sister. I just think... Never mind. He turned away, back to where the party was still taking place. He hadn't intended to start another fight. He'd wanted to make things between them better, not worse. Lord Ashcroft, the Marquis's voice stopped him. He sighed. Would you like to come by the estate tomorrow, and we can try again for both our siblings' sakes? Andrea paused and then nodded. Send a cart around to my townhouse and I will be there. Behind him, the door opened and shut, without a reply. The carriage jostled side to side along the unpaved road that led to the De La Marche estate, and Andrea stared out the window, feeling moody. It was early in the morning. He'd had to leave while the sky was still more gray than blue, most likely because the Marquis wanted to have their conversation before he had to attend to his other business. It suited Andrea just fine. He had other things he needed to attend as well, preparations for leaving the city. The Marquis's card with the details of their intended meeting had come via message bird. The tiny mechanical creature could only fly to a location with a spellcraft beacon, but Mathis, damn him, had installed one in their townhouse. The bird, which he had turned off and now laid quietly on the carriage seat next to him, was beautiful, really. Not the gaudy gilt and bejeweled things Andrea had seen at parties and around court. Its outer body was made out of silver and wood, carved to look like a real bird with wings made out of hundreds of tiny silver feathers, as well as a silver beak and silver feet. Its carved wooden body contained a complex network of tiny silver gears, along with a hollow space in its chest for the Marquis's message. Looking over at it, Andrea ran the tip of one finger across its now folded wings, wondering if the Marquis had made this one himself. He probably had. He'd invented the tiny birds after all. Andrea rubbed one hand across his forehead. He was still not sure what he would do when he got to the house and talked with the Marquis face to face. On the one hand, he'd meant what he'd said. He was sick of the fighting. If those championing mechanical animation continued to attack disciplines like his, then yes, he would fight. But he didn't want to argue with the Marquis anymore. He was tired of all of it, actually. All the arguing and the fighting. When he'd started out, he had simply wanted to study what he loved. It had been only after watching mechanical animations rise to dominance, watching the way they took money from others and attacked other disciplines through their publications, that Andrea had resolved to fight. Just because what Andrea loved flew directly in the face of mechanical animation's party line. As it were, he would not be bullied or cowed. Still, their academic differences aside, the Marquis's assertion that his sister would be settling for less with Mathis stung. Andrea had his own issues with Mathis. They were very different and rarely saw eye to eye. But Mathis was a good man, an honorable man. He had been a dutiful son and a good soldier, where Andrea himself had not. He would treat Emily with kindness and respect. Was it a love match? No. Just the same, Emily could do much worse than Andrea's brother. The carriage jolted again, causing Andrea to smack his forehead against the window set into the carriage door. Damn it. He rubbed the spot on his forehead with one free hand, hoping he wasn't going to have a bruise. He reached out the other hand without thinking, to make sure the tiny bird did not slide off the seat and break. The carriage stopped in front of the huge estate house, the driver jumping down to open the door for Andrea. Lord Ashcroft. A man in a smart dark jacket, waistcoat and breeches, met him at the foot of the marble steps that led up to the front door of the estate house, and bowed low. The Marquis de la Marche is around back practicing on the lawn. He said you should join him there. Fine. Andrea waved the hand he wasn't now cupping the little bird in. The man led the way down a well-maintained gravel path, around the west wing of the house and towards the back. Andrea could not be sure, but he thought they were heading in the direction of the observatory, and his stomach flipped. He was not sure he wanted to have this conversation, or any other, with the Marquis there now. He spotted the figure on the grass, though, as they came around the house. The Marquis had stripped off his jacket and waistcoat, his shirt sleeves rolled up to the elbows, his hair coming undone from where he'd tried to tie it back at the nape. He held a rapier in his gloved right hand, and seemed to be practicing forms. At least he was practicing footwork, Andrea thought, watching him advance across the grass, holding his body low to lunge at any moment. The rapier was a large, heavy weapon. Andrea himself preferred the small sword, a gentleman's weapon. Lord Ashcroft? The servant who had brought Andrea around announced when they were a few feet away, still standing on the gravel path that led around the house. The Marquis did not pause or look over at them, and the servant bowed to Andrea and left. Going back into the house through the glass doors, Andrea remembered being thrown open during the party. The sunlight was just now changing from pale light of early morning to a richer, brighter gold. It would be a nice day. Andrea stared at the grass in front of him, just off the little path he was standing on, so that he wouldn't watch the way stray curls stuck to the curve of the Marquis's throat as he moved. The entire lawn was perfectly cared for, rich and green, with dew clinging to the blades. Andrea frowned and crossed his arms over his chest. You shouldn't be fencing on the grass if it's still wet. That's a good way to kill yourself. A few paces off, the Marquis stopped, straightened arm falling to his side, and sighed. "Good morning to you as well, Lord Ashcroft." His voice held a note of wry good humor more than annoyance. He turned towards Andrea finally and brought the hilt of his rapier to his lips in a salute. "Good morning." Andrea felt a pang of guilt for not greeting him properly first. He looked around, spotting a bench not far off, on which the Marquis had folded his jacket and waistcoat. The Marquis walked over to it, and Andrea followed, watching as he wrestled back on his waistcoat before sitting on the bench, jacket in his lap. Andrea hesitated for a moment, before sitting beside him. They were very close. If Andrea turned his head, he would be able to see where strands of auburn hair stuck to the tanned lines of the Marquis's throat, or the smooth plane of his cheek, which he'd obviously just shaved. Andrea swallowed and looked down at his hands in his lap, which still held the little bird. "Here." He handed the little thing over to the Marquis, who looked surprised and then amused, taking it from Andrea's grasp. "You could have just flung it out the window while it was still on. It's spelled to come back to this house, you know."
"I..."
Andrea squirmed a little, feeling his cheeks heat with mortification. He was probably the only person in the country who did not know how to use a message bird. Certainly he was the only well-educated person who'd never used one, he was sure. Even the Duchess de Saint-Cloud used them, and she was in her 90s. "I was not sure how it worked." "It's quite all right." The Marquis tucked the little thing away into his jacket before turning back to Andrea, expression growing serious. "I've been doing a lot of thinking about what you have said. I believe that we have been wrong in many regards in the way we have been trying to promote the new field. I do truly believe this is the future of spellcraft, however, and I will continue to write about it as such."
"Can't you see how problematic that is?"
Andrea could feel his temper rising to mix with his embarrassment, making his stomach roil, and they'd barely spoke to each other yet. "But it's true." The Marquis held his hands out to Andrea, fingers spread, almost pleading, which didn't sway Andrea's anger any. "No, it's not. There isn't some sort of clear evolution, some glorious march of progress. It's much more complicated than that. Magic is more complicated than that." "Just because I say something is the way of the future, that doesn't make it superior to other ways." The Marquis's tone was almost pleading. Andrea snorted at that. "Of course it does. You're just choosing to pretty it up with fancy words now." The Marquis clenched his jaw. Andrea fancied the Marquis was developing a small tick in his cheek. "Do not make me out to be a liar." "I am not calling you a liar." Andrea wanted to throw his hands up, wanted to storm off. What was it about them that they could not even have one calm and respectful conversation? Actually, they had. They just hadn't known who the other was at the time. "What do you suppose the Emperor or the Crown Prince or any of the nobles at court hear when you say that mechanical animation is the way of the future?" The Marquis blinked. "Why should it matter?" For a split second, Andrea thought of Sasha, thought of his wife and son, then exploded. "Of course it matters." He was on his feet before he could stop himself, voice pitched at full volume. "That's what this is all about, the only thing this has all been about." The Marquis opened his mouth to speak, but Andrea kept right on going. "Oh yes, it should be about ideals and intellectual concepts and the finer points of honor and scholarship, but that's not what it's about, not really. When it comes right down to it, it's about money and has always been. All of you who pioneered mechanical animation attacked other disciplines back in the early days to prove you were the only ones worthy of funding. Then I came after you to prove that it wasn't true. It's been ugly and it's been dirty, but the ugliest and dirtiest part is that it has nothing to do with ideas or spellcraft at all. It's about who has the money and who doesn't." He scrubbed both hands across his face. "I hate it, by the way. If that makes you feel any better, I hate it. You called what I did mudslinging, and you're pretty much right.
That's what I do. Because I have 3 research assistants who are hardworking and meticulous in their scholarship, and they love learning and they love books, and they are some of the most brilliant people I've ever met. But because they are noble-born, they will never teach, never publish, and the only way they get to darken the doors of the university is by working for me. And soon, I won't be able to afford to pay them. He was pacing back and forth now as he spoke, hands balled into fists. On the bench, the Marquis sat silently and stared at him, as if he didn't recognize Andrea anymore. And I hate it. I hate the thought that Sasha might never be able to be in that library again, because he specializes in ancient languages, and that's of no use to any of you. But being in that library makes him light up. It makes him happy. Soon I won't be able to afford to do my research either. My brother has already told me I can't use the family money. I'm free to come home and live off of it here in the capital, as long as I am a good noble and dedicate myself to politics and social life. But not before. I can't use it for my studies, even if my studies are all I have of worth. When my father kicked me out and wouldn't let me come home, when my mother killed herself because she couldn't bear to live with me, when my brother joined the army and I didn't hear from him for 2 years, in all that time, my studies have been my life. He reached up, rubbing his hands across his face, hands shaking ever so slightly. The research is what I'm good at. It is what sustains me, but I can't do it anymore. I can't afford to. And I hate that I have to scrape and backstab to afford even this much. He felt tears prick behind his eyes and tried to hold them back, tried to take a long breath. Is that what you want to hear? Then you're right. I am in the wrong. I am the one who has lowered myself to playing dirty. Andrea hated the few tears that slid down his face and turned his back to hide them. He was telling the Marquis things he'd never intended to tell anyone. It was horrible and humiliating to be this vulnerable, but he couldn't seem to make himself stop. If possible, the Marquis would think less of him now, hold him even further in contempt. Word of his humiliation would travel quickly through the academic ranks. It would make it all that much harder when he needed to come crawling to them for some research position somewhere. He had thought the worst possible fate would be if he was forced to work as some kind of research assistant for the Marquis. Worse still, though, would be working for some lesser academic because the Marquis didn't even want him, which he was sure not to now. No, Andrea could hear the Marquis sigh. Look. Sit. Andrea turned back slowly, and the Marquis pointed to the bench beside him, and after a moment, Andrea folded himself back onto it. The Marquis ran his fingers up through his hair, which had already been coming free of its ribbon. All right, so I have been naive and an idiot, I'll admit it. And for the record, I would hate it if the only field was mechanical animation. That is not, nor has it ever been, my goal. Well, that is what is happening. No one else has the money to sustain themselves. Andrea rubbed his hand across his eyes. A dull ache had started behind them, but at least the tears had stopped. The Marquis's jaw clenched. I'll look into it. Andrea barely heard him, hands shaking badly. Panic rose up in his stomach, threatening to overwhelm him. What was he doing here? What had he been thinking, losing control like that in front of the Marquis? I should leave. Andrea stood. Coming here was a mistake, since I can't seem to behave with proper decorum. I am sorry. Wait. The Marquis made a grab for his hand, standing as well. You know I don't believe any of it. What? Andrea turned back towards him. What you said about yourself. I don't believe it. I get angry, I snap and say things I regret, but I don't actually believe your actions constitute backstabbing. I've always thought better than that of you. The panic and need to flee was still so strong, threatening to close off his throat and choke him. Andrea was distantly aware that the Marquis was trying to soothe and apologize. Really, all he could think of was getting away, though, even as his body seemed frozen in place, anchored by the Marquis's hand around his own.
I should go. Stay. The Marquis hadn't let go of his hand, but then Andrea hadn't tried to pull away either. Come inside with me. Have a cup of coffee. The least I can do is give you breakfast. Maybe he could fix the damage he'd done by all but breaking down in the man's garden.
Very well, then.
The Marquis picked up his fencing equipment and led the way back towards the house. Leading the way through the ballroom right beyond the double glass door, the Marquis opened the door to a small sunroom to the right, where a table had been laid for breakfast. Please. He waved at one seat before taking the other. Sit. Picking up the silver coffee pot, he poured them both a cup. Andrea accepted the cup of coffee, along with a still-warm scone with clotted cream and fresh strawberries. So, the Marquis reached for a silver bowl of honey, drizzling some over his own scone with cream. What do you do when you're not attending parties with your brother, doing research or arguing with me? Andrea blinked, surprised, lifting the fine china cup to his lips and sipping his coffee. Not much. I read. I'm interested in all fields, not just my own, and I also play the harpsichord. Really? The Marquis looked up at that, eyes lighting, and he had a smear of cream at the corner of his mouth. My sister plays. I was never musically talented, unfortunately, although I love listening to others. I'm not very good. Andrea ducked his head, fingers curling tight around his cup to keep from doing something stupid, like reaching out to wipe the dab of cream away from the Marquis's lips. Oh, I'm sure you're very good. There was something half amused and half resigned to the Marquis's tone. I can't imagine you not mastering anything you set out to master. Andrea picked up a strawberry and popped it into his mouth, not really knowing what to say. What about you? Much like you, I read. The Marquis reached for his cup of coffee. I study astronomy, although I am in no way professional about it. I fence as well. It is my one true gentlemanly pursuit. What was the last thing you read? Andrea asked, and watched the Marquis's eyes crinkle at the corners as he smiled. The Duke pursued. He laughed as Andrea's eyebrows shot up. It is one of the romance novels my sister and her friends read, with some quite scandalous scenes, which, I've been told, have been all the talk of the ladies' reading circles for the last few months. He blew across the top of his cup to cool his coffee before taking a sip. It made for a very enjoyable break between journal articles on the latest method for inscribing spellcraft symbology into metals and Lord Demetz's treatise on the nature of war. What was the last thing you read? Andrea felt himself blush and looked away. Writings on the nature of mechanical engineering and its relationship to the ancient art of magical inscription. The Marquis stared at him for a long minute, in which Andrea fidgeted with his coffee cup. My book, the Marquis finally said. You read? He waved one hand. No, I'm not even going to ask what you thought of it. I don't want to fight again. I liked it. Andrea was pretty sure he was bright red at this point. And he held himself stiffly, back as straight as he could make it. He had liked it, even if the Marquis clearly thought he had hated it. He needed the Marquis to know that, even if he was not quite sure why. I thought it was well-researched and well-argued, and I find mechanical engineering to be fascinating. Silence fell between them. Andrea risked a glance up to see the Marquis staring at him, mouth slightly open. Well, thank you. The Marquis set his coffee cup aside, finally. I know you wouldn't give me praise you didn't mean. I do mean it. Andrea took another sip of coffee, willing away the high flush in his cheeks. I also meant it when I told you at the party that I was interested in all of the new sciences. Well, then, something we have in common. My life has been all about the new sciences, it would seem. Andrea frowned a little at that, trying to think of what other new sciences the Marquis was referring to. There was mechanical animation, of course, but astronomy was considered one of the old disciplines.
Mechanical animation, but...
Well, also the research into the combining of spellcraft and medicine, although not so much as a scholar than as a case subject. The Marquis poured himself another cup of coffee. I'm sure you know the story, at least, even if you haven't read the journal articles. Andrea bit his lip and looked away. He should have realized that was what the Marquis was alluding to from the beginning.
I have read the journal articles about new medical treatment to make individuals who have certain aspects of their body which do not fit with their gender more compatible. The procedure laid out in the last article I read sounded excruciatingly painful. Intense.
It's more pharmaceutical than strictly medical, or so I'm led to believe. The Marquis sipped his coffee, looking completely at ease with the conversation, although Andrea was feeling anything but.
How long have you...
No, Andrea cut himself off with a shake of his head. Never mind, that was inappropriate. You do not have to speak of such private things.
No, I don't.
The Marquis's tone was still easy, as was the smile he gave Andrea. But I don't mind speaking of these things with you. When I was born, the doctor and midwife who attended proclaimed me to be a girl, as I'm sure you've read. That, however, was obviously not the case. He set down his coffee cup. To hear my mother tell it, I realized that I was not a girl when I was 3, and was quite insistent about the fact. My parents humored me until I was about 6, at which point my father put his foot down. He said I was too young to know my own mind on such an important issue, and it was his right and his responsibility as my father to protect me, even from myself. I was told I would grow out of it and learn to accept being a girl, if not for myself, then for the sake of our family's reputation. The Marquis did not try to hide the anger or bitterness in his voice as he spoke of his late father, and Andrea felt a pang of sympathy. Andrea might not understand the rest of what the Marquis had been through, but he was all too familiar with the pain that came from being belittled by one's parent. The next period of my life was difficult. As my mother would say, I ceased to thrive. I refused to look at myself in the mirror, refused to interact with my peers, and, after a time, with anyone. I stopped eating. No longer attended to my lessons or went riding. After a time, I stopped leaving the house at all and eventually would not leave my bed. The Marquis rested his chin on his hands, frowning a little in thought. It was not that I was ashamed to be treated like a girl. It was that everyone thought I was delusional, and that knowing who I was seen as a symptom of mental instability. I believed, with good reason, that everyone thought I was broken, and was reminded of that fact every time I dressed as a girl, or was called by my girl name. He shook his head. At any rate, when I became bedridden, my parents sent me to live with my aunt, my mother's sister, at her house in the country. My aunt is a brilliant woman, much as my mother is, actually. But where my mother spends her days immersed in politics, her sister studied law and medicine instead. She quickly realized that what I needed was for someone to acknowledge who I was, without treating me with pity or disgust, or telling me I was mentally unwell. When she started treating me like I was a perfectly fine, intelligent little boy, I was able to recover. The years when my body matured were the most difficult, but my aunt saw me through them, and I lived with her quite happily for many years. Eventually, she discovered the statute, which was when we petitioned the court. This part I know. Andrea leaned forward. There was a very old law still on the books, which said if a person had been proclaimed one gender at birth, but then lived as another for a certain number of years, they had to be legally and socially recognized as the gender they were living as. I'm sure everyone knows that part of my story. The Marquis shook his head. It was the court case of our generation, or so they tell me, dragged out for years. But we won, at which point I took on my father's name, as was my right as his firstborn son. I don't go by Leon, though, as he did. I prefer Gregory after my grandfather. Anyway, on to the medical science part of my tale. I was also approached by several physicians who were interested in creating a set of medical procedures which, as you say, would allow people in my position to live more comfortably in their bodies, should they want or need that. There was another round of legal fighting, but eventually they got the permission to begin treatments. I am the first person to have undergone them, and they are still very much imperfect and experimental. But now I can sport a roguish beard. The Marquis grinned over at him, and Andrea spluttered into his coffee, trying not to laugh or inhale it up his nose, and failing in both cases. More like the hair on a goat's chin. It was exceedingly roguish. In fact, Andrea was pretty sure he was blushing. "Do not insult my facial hair, or I will be forced to challenge you to a duel." The Marquis pointed an accusing finger at Andrea, but he was also grinning ear to ear. "It took me a long time to gain this beard. Besides, it's fashionable this season, and I'm quite enjoying that. It's very rare I get to be fashionable." "And I, for one, would not want to duel with you. I have just seen you with a sword, and I must say I am much worse at it than you are." "I do not duel." Andrea turned back to his coffee cup. "Unless it is with wits." Andrea huffed a surprised laugh at that one, and the Marquis chuckled as well. Laughter made his face light up and smile lines crinkle the corner of his eyes, much as smiling did. "So," the Marquis's expression became more serious after a moment, "you two left your family for a time and lived elsewhere." Andrea sighed. It was only fair, he supposed, after the Marquis had shared such an intimate history. Still, it hurt, even now. "My father was a despicable human being, and he was also obsessed with status. You see, my family is technically noble because the crown prince several generations ago created the title and bestowed it on his favorite mistress and her children, which means we have the wealth and the name, but our line is no more legitimate than the prince and the first lady de Bourbon's children's were. My father was obsessed with changing this, as my brother is now interested in doing. Part of this obsession meant driving both his sons to higher and higher social position. Mathis thrived under such pressure, even if it was often cruel, but I did not. I am small, and my body is not exactly made for more physical or gentlemanly endeavors. I have always loved scholarship, always chosen to spend my days in the library by myself rather than among other nobles, and I am completely unsuited to any kind of military service. No amount of ill-treatment, fighting, screaming, or punishment could change any of that. So after a time, my father became disgusted with my supposed uselessness, turned me out of the house, and said I was never to return. I had no means at all. I worked as a shop clerk for 3 years, and then as a private secretary, trying to scrape together money for my studies before my father finally had the good grace to die. He looked up at the Marquis, who was staring at him with enough sympathy that Andrea had to look away. "I am so sorry." Andrea waved a hand. "It was not that bad. It could have been much worse. Besides, I was not the one to really suffer because of my father's decision." His lips tightened into a straight line, fingers almost crushing the cup still between his hands, and he set it aside so he wouldn't break the fine china. "It killed my mother being alone with him and not being able to see either of her sons." The Marquis reached across the table to clasp one of Andrea's hands in his, startling Andrea, although he kept from pulling away. "I am sorry for your loss." Andrea shook his head. "It was a long time ago. I shouldn't have brought up such depressing things." "I did ask." The Marquis's fingers were warm around his. On a different, preferably lighter note, do you know much about astronomy?
No, not really. I mean, I've read some, but like I told you when we first met, I'm not really welcome in those parts of the university.
Well, come on then. The Marquis downed the rest of his coffee and stood. I have a little time before I need to go into town.
I really should go.
Nonsense. The Marquis held out his hand with a smile. I hardly ever get a chance to show off the telescope. Against his better judgment, Andrea took the Marquis's hand and allowed himself to be tugged back through the house and out the glass doors into the garden. They crossed the wide green between the house and observatory. The Marquis dug a small key out of his waistcoat pocket when they reached the door to the observatory, and then led the way inside and up the spiral staircase. It's too early in the day, of course, for us to see any stars. More's the pity, but I can show you the moon if we are in luck. He bent to look into the lens at the end of the telescope. He then crouched down to crank a small handle that made some of the cogs on the base of the telescope turn with a dull grinding noise. The Marquis straightened up to peer through the lens again. Here. He turned to Andrea. You look through the lens here while I adjust the angle. Tell me when the sky comes into clear focus, and then if you catch sight of the moon, give a shout. It'll be pale, but it should be there. With a nod, Andrea bent to look through the eye lens, as the Marquis continued to fiddle with the gears, cogs, and cranks on the sides and underbelly of the telescope.
So how long have you been interested in astronomy? Andrea asked, watching the morning sky above them become different kinds of blurry, as the Marquis adjusted the lenses.
Oh, I've loved looking at the stars since I was a boy, and all sciences fascinate me. I had this place built here when I was 18. My father, who was still alive then, took me out riding and asked me what I wanted for my birthday. I truly don't know what he had been expecting me to ask for, but I said I wanted a telescope and an observatory. Andrea looked up from the lens to see the Marquis grinning. He wasn't pleased. Andrea thought of his own father again and pressed his lips together. I got my observatory, though, and have been studying the sky ever since. I considered for a long time studying it when I went to university.
Why didn't you?
Andrea bent to look into the lens again. There was a long pause, long enough to make Andrea wonder if he wasn't ever going to get an answer at all. Stupid. They had been getting along for all of 10 minutes, and he'd managed to ruin it. Ambition, the Marquis said finally, voice serious, and Andrea looked up again to find the Marquis had stopped with his fiddling and was staring at the ground. They were close together now, so much so they were almost touching, and yet there was no discomfort in that. The Marquis gave a small laugh, resting his forearm against the side of the telescope and leaning his forehead against it. My family is very ambitious. My father, my mother, even my sister. I always thought I wasn't, always told myself I'd left the scheming and the social maneuvering behind. I'm not in politics or part of the army. I don't play the whole game at court, but in the end, I'm just as ambitious as any of them when it comes to mechanical animation. Because in it, I saw an opportunity to do something amazing, groundbreaking, something no one had ever done before, and make my name along the way. I grabbed it and put aside my love of astronomy. I would have been happy as an astronomer, but I wouldn't have been one of the founders of the new revolutionary science. I would have been just the son of a nobleman, working in the observatory his father built him. Andrea very much doubted that would have been the only thing the Marquis was, even if he'd chosen astronomy. There is nothing wrong with ambition. In and of itself, it's not a bad thing. Andrea found himself fidgeting and looking away before he could meet the Marquis's eyes. Still, he thought it was only fair after the full meltdown he'd had earlier. Are you not happy now, doing what you're doing? I love mechanical animation. I love what we've accomplished and the good it does. The Marquis turned his head a little to the side so he could look at Andrea.
Yes, but you didn't answer the question. Are you happy?
He did not understand why the Marquis's happiness was so important to him. It just was, and he found himself desperate for the answer.
"Are you?" The silence hung between them, and Andrea could hear the sound of his own heart in his ears, could feel the warmth coming off the Marquis from how close they stood. A few moments ago, that closeness had seemed natural. Now he was so aware of it that it made his skin prickle. The Marquis was wearing an aftershave that smelled like black tea and lavender. Simple, not dark and heavy like most aftershaves on the market. For a moment, Andrea wondered what he smelled like. Probably the plain soap he'd used this morning, and grass from the garden. Andrea spread his hands out in front of him, open in surrender.
No. Of course he wasn't. He hated to be this tight for money. Hated to feel like he was letting Sasha and his other assistants down. Most of all, he hated being alone. The last was something he only rarely admitted, even to himself. Their gazes caught and held again. Andrea was the first to turn away.
I should go.
No, wait, the Marquis called from behind him, but Andrea didn't stop, just descended the stairs, pushing the door open and striding across the green back and around the house to where his carriage was waiting.
Are we leaving, my lord?
His driver asked, already swinging up into the seat.
Yes.
Andrea pulled open the carriage door, just as the Marquis de la Marche came around the side of the manor house at a dead run.
Wait!
He skidded to a halt on the gravel drive next to Andrea, and then doubled over, wheezing and trying to catch his breath.
There is an opera being performed at the Royal Opera House tomorrow night. Would you like to accompany me?
Are you asking me out? Andrea turned towards him, the disbelief, he was sure, written across his face.
We do not get along, so much so that we can barely have a civil conversation together. It would be unwise, I think, for us to mingle socially. Besides, I am to leave for the university.
Empty-handed, he was going to have to fire his research assistants, including Sasha.
Wait, the Marquis said again, but Andrea didn't pause as he stepped up into his carriage and shut the door.
Stupid, stupid, he told himself the whole way down the long drive and onto the road beyond. What had they been doing in the observatory and when the Marquis had asked him to come to the opera? They could not stand each other, could not hold a conversation without fighting. But yes, Andrea found the Marquis attractive. The best either of them could hope for, however, would be a fleeting affair, one which could potentially damage both of their careers. It was most certainly not worth the risk. There was no nice way to put it. This was a stupid idea. Andrea didn't even know what his preferred outcome would be at this point. He was dressed in a dark blue jacket and breeches, his jacket embroidered with silver swallows, white silk stockings, white linen shirt, and cravat. Outside the carriage window, the city passed by. Rows of townhouses giving way to buildings of state. The long, sprawling buildings on either side with their imposing gray stonework were for banking of some kind, Andrea thought. He wasn't sure since he hardly ventured into this part of town. Ahead of them loomed a long stone building with pillars lining the front and wide stone steps leading up to the wide arched doorways, which had been opened. The carriage stopped, and Andrea climbed out onto the street where people were mingling, talking and heading up the steps into the Royal Opera House. He'd actually had to ask his brother when the opera started so he would be on time. The Marquis probably hadn't even come. Andrea had managed to keep all the rational reasons for turning the Marquis down in the forefront of his mind until the evening after it had happened. Then he'd thought of how good it had been when they'd stood close together, almost touching, speaking of private things without arguing. It was unreasonable to come here. The Marquis surely would not also have come after Andrea had turned him down. At least, that was what Andrea had been telling himself as he had gotten dressed and during the drive here. He would look around, watch some of the opera, and then go home. The Marquis need never know of his foolishness. He should not be here. Should not have come at all. But if he hadn't, If he really passed up this ghost of a chance, he would spend the rest of his life wondering what it would have been like to see an opera with the Marquis de la Marche. It made no sense, this wanting to be here and yet not. But then, that was the Marquis all over, making Andrea want things he wasn't supposed to want. Andrea tried to keep his head down and walked up the steps of the opera house. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught a handsome young couple eyeing him, the lady's expression one of distaste. He looked away, wishing the style of jacket didn't make him quite so portly. "Andrea!" Somebody bumped into him from behind, making him stumble forward. A hand reached out, clamping around his arm and steadying him. He looked around, right into dark blue eyes. "Andrea," the Marquis said again. "I didn't think you were coming."
"I... don't call me that, it's too familiar. I wasn't."
The Marquis smiled that slow smile with heat all the way to his eyes. He looped his arm in Andrea's as they were headed up the steps. The Marquis was so warm where they pressed together, Andrea imagined he could feel the Marquis' touch straight down through the layers of jacket and shirt sleeve. He swallowed dryly. The Marquis had come. He'd actually come and been happy to see him. Andrea hadn't actually let himself think of that possibility at all. His stomach flipped and he clutched at the Marquis's arm tight enough it probably hurt a little. The Marquis had invited him to breakfast, invited him to see his telescope, and invited him to the opera. Oh God, he was being courted by the Marquis de la Marche. He was letting himself be courted, because he'd come too. Andrea wondered if he might pass out from lightheadedness at the realization. Andrea wasn't much of an opera fan, but he was content to take the glass of wine the Marquis offered him and settle into the chair next to his in one of the private boxes. He'd been intending to buy a ticket at the door, but the Marquis had produced a season pass, and no one had moved to question him when he'd looped his arm with Andrea's again and drawn him up to the box. The music started and the singers stepped forward. Andrea allowed his gaze to slide sideways. The Marquis was dressed in a rich brown without any embroidery, his hair tied back with a ribbon. Andrea thought it looked lovely on him, even though it wasn't fashionable. The Marquis was lovely all over, handsome and charming, Andrea would admit, and courting him, evidently. Maybe an affair would not be that bad after all, if that was what the Marquis wanted. Maybe they could keep from fighting. They could have more mornings and evenings together like their breakfast and the times at the observatory. It had been a long time since Andrea had wanted anyone, longer still since he'd given in to such desires. Now his fingers itched to reach out and touch the Marquis, run a thumb along the fragile skin of his inner wrist, shift close enough for their knees to brush. There had only been one other man with whom he'd had something he would call an affair. Henry had been a private secretary like Andrea had been then, working for a wine merchant while Andrea worked for a banking firm. They'd gone out at least once a week, slept together in both senses of the term. They had never spoken of work, never spoken of marriage or living together. It had been quiet and pleasant, though, to relax with someone and talk of trivial things, before losing themselves in the physical. If the Marquis wanted that, they might try. Andrea wouldn't think of it going any further, courting or no. He felt guilty almost at once. What was he doing, thinking about having an affair with the Marquis de la Marche, when he did not have funding yet to save his career, more importantly, to keep Sasha and his family cared for? He should have been putting any and all thoughts of a romantic involvement with the Marquis out of his mind. Lit by the dim lights of the opera house, the Marquis turned and smiled at Andrea again, leaning close so that his lips almost touched Andrea's ear. "Are you enjoying yourself?" "I am not that much of an opera fan." Andrea forced himself to keep his gaze straight ahead, focused on the stage and not the Marquis's warm breath against the side of his neck. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the Marquis smile widen. "Then why are you here?" "You don't seem to be paying all that much attention to the singers either. "So why are you here?" Andrea finally looked over at him, meeting the Marquis's eyes. He was deflecting, he knew, but he didn't want to answer right now, not until he had decided what he wanted this to be. If anything, the Marquis was grinning wider now. "I wanted to spend more time with you, time when we were not fighting about academics or the nature of marriage among the nobility. You said you enjoyed the conversation we had in the observatory when we first met, and so did I. In fact, I enjoyed the conversations we had over breakfast and in the observatory. I was wondering if we could socialize as cordially somewhere else." Andrea pressed his lips tightly together and reminded himself again of the reason he'd come to the capital in the first place. Maybe if he bettered his relationship with the Marquis, he would be able to obtain some of the funding that flowed to the study of mechanical animation. On the other hand, the idea of continuing to socialize with the Marquis, while also having a hidden agenda, did not sit well. "I should not be here at all."
"Yet you are." They were sitting close, probably closer than was proper. Their knees touched and the Marquis's hand was almost touching Andrea's. No one was looking at them. Everyone was focused on the stage, and the lights were dim. But still, Andrea was no longer in any doubt about the Marquis's interest.
"I am attracted to you." Andrea turned to face the Marquis squarely, pitching his voice low enough to keep the conversation just between the two of them. "I enjoy your forthrightness and your passion, even if you and your academic cause infuriate me most of the time. I also find you immensely physically appealing. Quite handsome, in fact. Under other circumstances, I would not be averse to learning what might come from us knowing each other better. However, I came to the capital to secure myself funding. I am almost out of money. My brother will not allow me access to our family's funds, and if I do not have funding, not only will I be unable to continue my research, but I will have to fire all of my research assistants, one of whom has a young family he is struggling to support. This must come first, and thus, I do not have time to start something this personal in nature. I am sorry if I led you to believe otherwise." He made to rise. If he didn't leave now, he'd say and do something he would regret, like changing his mind and telling the Marquis he wanted an affair anyway. The Marquis grabbed at his hand. "Wait." Andrea stopped, although he did not look around. "Did it not occur to you to ask me to fund your work, or to sleep with me and then ingratiate yourself into the circle of nobles who fund my work?" Andrea sighed. "Our relationship up until this point has been many things, but it has almost always been honest. I have never sought to trick or use you, despite what you have accused me of. I am not going to start now." He dared a look at the Marquis, who was watching him with a thoughtful look on his face. "Sit down, please," the Marquis said. "I don't see what difference this will make." Andrea sat back down anyway. "I could fund you."
"I would rather not accept charity," Andrea said, hypocritical though that might be, seeing as how he offered it. "And second, why would you fund someone who is essentially your competitor? Or have you forgotten the article I wrote about you?"
"I haven't forgotten. But you were right the last time we spoke on this. Those of us in mechanical animation have taken too hard of a stance, and by doing so, we have very possibly caused more damage than good. I want to change that if it is in my power to do so. Also," the Marquis's eyes slid to watch Andrea and then away, "I have decided to stop studying mechanical animation, at least for a little while."
"What?"
Andrea's voice climbed loud enough that the people sitting in the next box craned to look at them.
"How can you do that?"
Andrea lowered his voice, leaning close but not trying to disguise the angry hiss.
"Why would you do that? I hope this is not some kind of attempt to get into my good graces so you can bed me, because you will find yourself sadly mistaken if it is."
"No, it is not. It has nothing to do with you, except in so much as when you asked me if I was happy, I could not answer you."
The Marquis glared right back, matching Andrea's angry tone with one equally as steely. I am proud with what I have done studying mechanical animation, but I love astronomy, a passion I have pushed aside for too long. I believe the time has come for me to pursue it now. Whether I bid you or not is immaterial. They glared at each other for a taut moment. Well, good, Andrea finally said, sitting back, and the Marquis let out a short laugh. God, I have never met anyone like you, Lord Ashcroft. You are astonishing, if a bit trying to the nerves. Andrea felt his lips turn up in a small smile at that. I believe the feeling is mutual, he said, and call me Andrea. Only if you call me Gregory, and leave off using my full title every time we meet. I am not taking your money. Andrea leaned his elbows on his knees, gazing down at the stage below them, trying not to get distracted by the idea of being allowed to use Gregory's given name. They were not going to have an affair. You need a patron. I happen to be of a noble family with plenty of money to spare, and a particular interest in the kind of academics you do. The Marquis, Gregory, also fixed his gaze on the stage. And Andrea felt as if they were negotiating some kind of nefarious plan via code words and secret meetings, with them both choosing their words carefully, and not looking at each other as they danced around the issues. It sent a little thrill through him. Would you really want to bed me if you are also my patron? Andrea asked. Wouldn't you wonder if I were possibly sleeping with you only for the money? Gregory actually laughed. I can't imagine you ever being able to hide your true feelings enough to do that. You called me forthright, but Lord knows you are the most forthright person I've ever met. You say what you think and spare no one's feelings. I find it charming and infuriating in equal measure. I still won't accept you as my patron. You need the money. You told me yourself you did. Andrea deflated because Gregory was right. He did. If Gregory, as heir to the Marquis de la Marche fortune, could fund him well enough to support not only himself, but Sasha and Maddie and their little son, then who was he to turn it down? Taking money, which was almost assuredly charity being offered because Gregory pitied him and felt guilty about his role in causing it, would only hurt his pride in the long run, and it seemed a small price to pay. Very well. He crossed his arms over his chest and his legs at the knee. I will accept you as my patron if you so choose. Gregory gave him a long look, frowning now. But if I agree to be your patron and give you funding, you will not be sharing my bed. Andrea kept his eyes on the stage and did not look around at him again. No, I will not. There was a long moment of silence, and then Gregory sighed. As always, you make this difficult, but I will do my best to look after you now that I am your patron. There was disappointment in Gregory's voice, and a sinking feeling inside of Andrea. He did not look around, though, didn't reach out for Gregory. Instead, he kept his eyes fixed on the opera singers, and pretended to enjoy the music.
Ashcroft, we must speak. Andrea looked up from his work as Mathis stormed into his office.
You're back from the border already. More importantly, what was Mathis doing here? Andrea hadn't even thought Mathis knew where his office was.
I am back from the border for a short stay only, Mathis put his hands on his hips, and I received a letter from Lady Amelie. She says that she has lived too sheltered a life in the capital and has chosen to see the world. As of now, she has set sail for the southern continent and plans on traveling across the great desert on camelback with her traveling companion, the Duchess von Mensdorf-Puyi. She has turned down my proposal of marriage.
Well, Andrea blinked, trying to sort out the memory of tiny Lady Amelie with someone willing to trek across the great desert on a camel. Then again, she was Gregory's sister. It's a pity that she did, since you both seem to share a love of travel and throwing yourself into danger.
I was fond of her. Mathis paced across the tiny space of Andrea's office. With Gregory's funds, he'd been allowed to keep it, although he had opted only to hire back Sasha and one other research assistant, but doubled both of their salaries.
More importantly, however, we are missing out on an opportunity to join with a legitimate house.
Andrea sighed at that, removing his spectacles so he could rub across his eyes.
Mathis, you have a good career. You are a well-respected officer. Our family money is substantial, and I at last have a patron for my work. We are both extremely lucky.
So if our house remains illegitimate, then we should count our blessings and leave it at that. There are more important things than title.
Easy for you to say, since status means nothing to you, and never has.
Mathis eyed him with a speculative look that put Andrea on his guard.
You are close to the Marquis de la Marche, are you not?
I am not marrying the Marquis. Andrea threw his pen down, with enough force to spatter ink across his sheet of notes.
Really, Mathis, he is my patron. It would be inappropriate for us to have an affair, much less marry.
Why couldn't Mathis just leave him alone and stop with the social manipulating?
Why could not everyone drop the subject of his and Gregory's relationship so that he could get on with his work without thinking about it?
There lay the heart of the matter. Andrea closed his eyes briefly. He wanted Gregory. He had not stopped wanting him. If anything, he wanted him more now that the stress of his financial situation was somewhat lightened. Going back to him and saying he'd changed his mind, and now wanted a relationship of a physical or romantic nature, would feel a little too much like letting Gregory win on all fronts. The trouble was, Andrea was no longer sure letting Gregory win would be such a bad thing. He massaged his forehead.
"Since when have you worried about propriety?"
Mathis was watching him far too carefully now.
"Did you want to have an affair with the Marquis? You do seem terribly worked up about it."
"The Marquis and I have never seen eye to eye, and still don't, for all he funds my research." Andrea picked up his pen and tried to blot the worst of the ink blotches. "Any kind of relationship between the two of us would be ill-advised."
"But he wanted to have an affair with you."
Mathis was leaning across the desk now, arms braced on the top.
"Drop it, Mathis." Andrea tried to turn away and bury himself in his notes.
"Fine."
Mathis straightened back up, but the look he threw Andrea was still far too speculative for Andrea's liking.
"Your brother seems very set on our families being allied through marriage."
Andrea set his teacup aside.
"I would assume most noble families are keen on allying with your family. You have both title and wealth, after all."
"Why? What has he said to you?"
Oh, God, what had Mathis said or done? How awkward was this conversation about to get? It had been bad enough sitting here having tea, pretending he wasn't fantasizing about Gregory kissing him or bending him over the table.
"He wrote me a letter, hinting in a rather roundabout way that you and I become intimate." Andrea closed his eyes and tried to take several calming breaths before opening them up again. At least the anger at Mathis's meddling presumption drove all the dirty thoughts out of his head.
"Did he?"
Those deep breaths hadn't helped much.
"I told him the holdup was not on my end." Gregory was grinning now.
Andrea glared. How could Gregory find this funny? How could Andrea still find him so attractive when he was being this irritating?
"You are funding me out of pity. I am not also sleeping with you. It will not happen."
"I am not funding you out of pity. We've been over this. I think your research is interesting and certainly challenging, especially when taken with my own views on the subject. I enjoy being challenged.
Plus, there is your foolish insistence on leaving a perfectly good career to pursue astronomy, which may or may not have been to impress me."
It was most certainly not to impress you.
Gregory sat back, one leg crossed over the other, cradling his cup between his hands. Besides, if it had been, I would have failed rather spectacularly.
I am still not sleeping with you.
Andrea eyed him over the table, still frowning.
He wasn't sure who he was trying to convince at this point. Probably himself.
God, you are stubborn. Gregory looked like he was relishing every minute of it, which made Andrea look away, cheeks heating.
I am not marrying you either.
Would you like to see the notes and charts I have made in the last few months of stargazing? Gregory uncrossed his legs with a small smile and set his cup aside.
Charts? Did he sound too eager now?
Probably. The sudden change in conversation was meant to distract him, but he was willing to let himself be distracted if it meant getting a look at those notes. He set his teacup aside and Gregory grinned at him.
Yes, charts. I have been busy with, as you term it, my foolishness. Come see.
The observatory now looked decidedly more lived in than Andrea remembered. There were stubs of candles from long nights perched on nearly every flat surface, and charts, papers and star maps covered the work tables and most of the floor. Andrea walked around a star chart that was held down on the floor by an inkwell at one corner and an empty wine glass on the other.
Do you simply not live in the house anymore?
Very funny. As if your office looks any different. Gregory threw him a look that was equal parts amused and exasperated.
Come and look at this.
Andrea bent over the chart at the table, trying to concentrate on the star systems mapped across it, and not the warmth of Gregory's shoulder. Out of the corner of his eye, he did watch the way Gregory's hand moved to push auburn curls out of his face as he leaned over the table.
Look here, see? I'm quite sure this is a planet.
Gregory pointed. I've made sketches of it here. He pulled the pages from another stack and laid them out across the top of the chart for Andrea to see.
What makes you think it is a planet?
The brightness and its shape, although I will have to build a better, stronger lens to be sure. Andrea hummed a little to himself as he examined the sketch and chart, bouncing ever so slightly on the balls of his feet as it helped his thinking.
Interesting. I look forward to reading the paper if and when you publish.
He looked up at Gregory, smiling a little at him. Perhaps not so foolish after all. Gregory kissed him then. Both of his hands came up to grip the sides of Andrea's face, as if Andrea might try to escape, as their lips pressed together. Escape was actually the last thing on Andrea's mind, as he groaned and leaned into Gregory, kissing him back as hard as he could, both hands coming up to tangle in Gregory's curls. They stumbled into the table as Gregory pressed against Andrea, heedless of his spectacles. Andrea shivered at the feel of Gregory's mouth and body, curling his hand around the back of Gregory's head. Gregory's lips tasted of bitter coffee and warm butter from breakfast. Andrea made a small noise of desire, pressing forward and deepening the kiss. The kiss ended even though Gregory's hands remained on Andrea's face, and Andrea's hands tangled in Gregory's hair.
We can't do this. It isn't proper.
Andrea took a deep breath, licking his lips and tasting the coffee from Gregory's mouth on them.
You never worry about what is proper.
Gregory leaned their foreheads together.
Tell me the truth. Do you want me?
Andrea looked up, met Gregory's eyes. He wanted this. Oh God, he wanted this.
We shouldn't.
The words felt more for himself than Gregory, and he didn't even believe them anymore.
But do you want to? Do you want me?
Andrea stared up at him for a split second, truly lost for words.
Of course I do. Very much so. I've wanted you since I first met you.
Then I want this. You want this. Your brother wants this.
For once, my lovely Andrea, just stop trying to make things more difficult than they are. Gregory leaned forward and kissed him again, arms going around him and holding him close. The scrape of Gregory's stubble against Andrea's chin was not at all as irritating as it might have been, and his arms were warm. So Andrea closed his eyes, and for once, stopped.
We are going to fight. I have never doubted that. Gregory's fingers traced patterns up Andrea's naked torso. It turned out Gregory did indeed have a bedroom inside the estate house, which he did sometimes use, or at least they had used it quite vigorously after moving from the observatory. I mean it, seriously. Andrea sighed but reached over so he could run his fingers through Gregory's hair, now down and falling around his face. I will argue probably incessantly, and if this goes any further than a simple affair, we will fight. I may even storm off and spend some time at my brother's townhouse. On top of that, we will probably never see eye to eye on certain academic topics. And probably a great many other things. Gregory pushed himself up so he was leaning over Andrea and kissed him. I have thought of all this, and I find I don't mind. No one argues with me like you do, and now that I know you are not out to discredit me, I find it rather endearing. Andrea snorted at that. You are the only one who does. Just ask my brother. He pushed himself up to kiss Gregory again before sliding out from under him and climbing out of bed. I am serious about this. It has the potential to be very bad and very messy. Neither of us pull our punches, metaphorically speaking. It is not a good basis to start a relationship. Unless, of course, you are interested in this thing between us being merely physical. And if the last 30 minutes were anything to go by, Gregory was quite good at the physical, and didn't mind that Andrea was not as pretty as the young dandies at court, and decidedly older. I was not planning on it, actually. Gregory was frowning a little bit now. I generally don't have affairs. Why? Is that what you want? Here it came, the incessant arguing. No. Andrea crossed his arms over his chest, perfectly aware that he had looked ridiculous standing there naked. I have not been interested in a simple affair for pleasure since I was much younger. What more can the two of us hope for, though? This is why I did not think we should be involved in the first place. Gregory climbed out of bed as well and came over to him, putting his hands on Andrea's shoulders. We probably should not have, but we did. And I am interested in more than an affair for pleasure with you. We will just have to be careful. Learn how to argue without drawing any real blood. He leaned forward. We are both smart men. We should be able to find enough common ground to build this on, if that is what you want. Andrea leaned against Gregory's chest and let himself relax, ever so slightly. It will be difficult. I wasn't expecting it to be easy. Gregory kissed the side of his face, along his jaw to his lips. I don't mind. There were a lot of other issues to consider, lots of ways this relationship might not work. Andrea didn't say that, though, only turned and kissed Gregory back. Their lips slid together, the kiss deepening as Gregory's lips parted under his own. Andrea tasted Gregory's warm, soft lips with the tip of his tongue, before pressing inside his mouth to taste him there as well. Gregory's hands moved across Andrea's body, mapping lines, dips, and curves. God, I've wanted you since the moment you came up my observatory staircase. Gregory's lips moved down his throat, leaving small kisses in their wake. Then Gregory was dropping to his knees in front of Andrea. You were so beautiful, a little flushed from the party and the champagne. I wanted to have you right there and then, as I have wanted every time we have met since. There was a little bit of awe in his voice, thinking back on it, and Andrea bit his lip.
Gregory nuzzled his cock all the way to the base, before licking across the skin of his balls. Pumping Andrea's length with his fist, Gregory leaned back to take the tip into his mouth, licking and then suckling at it.
Oh, God.
Andrea had always hated how high his voice went when he was aroused. But Gregory only grinned around his cock, bobbing his head, although he didn't take more than an inch into his mouth.
Yes, oh, fuck, yes, tighter with your hand.
Gregory pulled his mouth away, tightening his hand and increasing his pace as he pumped Andrea. He kissed and nuzzled at the inside of Andrea's thigh instead, sucking a dark mark against Andrea's pale skin. Andrea hissed at the small sting of pain, jerking his hips into Gregory's hands.
Good.
Gregory looked up at him, and Andrea nodded. Can you come?
Yes, I think.
Andrea tried to collect his scattered wits, looking down at Gregory where he knelt.
Not right now, though. It's good. It's just too much. I'm sorry.
Nothing to apologize for. Here. Gregory stood after a moment's hesitation and drew him back onto the bed. Their first coupling had been fast, a glorious mess of hands, lips, and teeth, as they'd explored each other's bodies and rubbed off against each other. Now, though, Gregory laid him down and then knelt at the edge of the bed, just looking for several long minutes before getting up and rummaging through a trunk that had been pushed up against the end of the bed. He came back to the bed with a jar and a long object he held up for Andrea's inspection. It was glass, a deep, beautiful red with tiny black flecks in the glass, two pieces that had been twisted together to make a surprisingly smooth surface. It also had a distinctly phallic shape with a flared base Gregory was gripping. I had this specially made after I saw one like it, brought back from the Far Eastern Empire. Gregory's voice held more than a hint of pride.
Is that?
Andrea almost dared not ask what he was thinking. He'd never seen anything like this before. It is indeed a glass cock. Gregory beamed at him. I would like you to put it in my ass. Gregory's eyes dropped then, and he seemed almost to become shy. Ridiculously so, considering what he had just proposed, Andrea thought. That is, if you want to. And then I want to use my mouth to make you come. Andrea took a breath, the images which flooded his mind on the heels of Gregory's request almost too much. I do want to, yes. Well then. Gregory smiled back up at him, and then climbed fully onto the bed, lying back. Andrea stared down at him for a long minute, taking in his tanned skin and the fanning of auburn hair across his chest. He pulled himself together and reached for the jar Gregory had placed on the bed. Opening it up, he smelled lavender, and pouring some onto his hand, found it was indeed slick. He poured some of it across his own hand, and then between Gregory's legs. How do you want me to touch you? Oh, God. Gregory tipped his head back a little. Touch my cock, please. Gregory was smaller than most of the other men Andrea had touched in this intimate manner, just about as long as his thumb, flushed red and almost quivering. Andrea used the tips of his fingers, rubbing the dark curls that it nestled in, and then across the head, using two fingers to pump up and down the shaft in a pinching motion. I love how you look. Andrea ran the tip of one finger up the underside of the shaft, before beginning to pump him again. Laid out like this, earlier I couldn't just look like I can now. No. Gregory's eyes were heavy-lidded as he gazed up at Andrea. I love looking at you, too. Andrea looked away and then back down to his hand working Gregory's body. His fingers slid away from Gregory's length to press between his cheeks. Gregory shifted, spreading his legs wider and canting his hips up to give Andrea a better angle to work. The glass toy was fat, bigger than anything Andrea ever had inside himself. so he pressed two fingers against Gregory's hole, caressing and stroking him. Gregory hummed a little in the back of his throat at that, letting his eyes fall shut.
"You feel so good to me here," Andrea said, voice soft. "Can't wait to see you open up and take the toy. I love the hair that fans across your chest, how it feels and how it looks against your skin. I love how slim your hips are."
He pressed against Gregory's opening, just testing, not hard enough to penetrate, and felt the muscles relax and give a little.
"I love how strong your arms are."
He bore down a little harder with his fingers.
"I love how your heated manhood feels in my hand."
"My what?" Andrea looked up to see Gregory had pushed himself up on his elbows and was looking down at him.
"What?"
Andrea froze.
"What did you call my cock?"
Feeling his cheeks heat, Andrea looked away.
Was it wrong?"
"Not wrong." Gregory was watching him with a smile curving his lips. Andrea drew himself up, doing his best to look down his nose. No easy feat since his spectacles were on the bedside table.
"I do not like the word cock. I find it uninteresting. I prefer heated manhood, or velvety blade, or even your proud warrior."
"Oh, God." Gregory covered his face with both hands, and after a moment, Andrea realized he was laughing.
"Velvety blade," Gregory gasped between bouts of hysteric giggles.
Andrea glared, pulling his hands away from Gregory's body and folding his arms across his chest. Self-consciousness mixed with anger and mortification in Andrea's chest. He drew even further away, turning to push himself off the bed.
"Oh, God, no, I'm not laughing at you, love." Gregory sat up and wrapped his arms around Andrea's now stiff form. "You are just so, so adorable and perfect, and this situation..."
He waved one hand between them and then across the bed. "I can't believe it's even real." Andrea let himself relax just a little bit as Gregory kissed him on the cheek and then the lips.
"You were laughing at me."
"Maybe a little." Gregory grinned down at him, hand still cupping Andrea's face, eyes so full of open fondness it made Andrea ache all over. "But really, Andrea, my proud warrior?" Andrea was sure he was blushing straight to the tips of his ears.
"No need to be crude about it."
"We are both naked. You are going to stick a glass cock up my ass, and I'm going to suck you off. The time for modesty has passed."
"Just lie back and let me do as I like." With Gregory's warm body pressed against him, his hands on Andrea's face, his gaze full of obvious want, Andrea could feel the heat stir in his belly again. His own heated manhood was half hard, nestled between his thighs. He reached down to squeeze and stroke it a little, breath catching and then exhaling in a half sigh. Gregory's lips brushed across his cheek, and down to press a tight kiss to Andrea's lips.
"Always love, at least within reason." Gregory lay back onto the bed, and Andrea reached for the glass phallus. He slicked it and rubbed his fingers against Gregory's opening one last time, and then pressed the tip of the toy against him. The toy pushed into Gregory an inch or so. Andrea stopped and watched as his chest heaved and his eyelids fluttered. Biting his lip, Andrea searched his face for signs of pain. He had never done this after all, had never even known there was a toy which could be used this way.
"Are you all right?"
"Yes." Gregory drew in a long, slow breath.
"Just keep going. Slow, but don't stop."
Andrea nodded, and then watched as Gregory's body opened, tight muscles softening to allow the large and wide length of twisted yet smooth red glass to enter him, stretch him open and hold him that way. His velvety blade was achingly hard between his thighs, and Gregory's hand gripped the sheet with a white-knuckled grip, his back arching slightly as he was penetrated by the incredibly hard length.
"Is it all the way in?"
Gregory's voice was strained. and Andrea sat back on his heels, staring at where Gregory's opening stretched wide around the base of the toy. Yes? Andrea's hands shook ever so slightly, and his breath came in shallow pants. His whole being ached to reach out and touch Gregory, to stroke across the slight swell of his pectorals, all the way down to where the base of the toy nestled between his cheeks. He clenched his hands instead for a moment, not sure he was allowed. "Then come here." Gregory reached one hand out to him, and Andrea crawled up the bed so he could kiss Gregory, slow and deep, his tongue delving between Gregory's lips to touch and taste. "I want to suck you." Gregory's eyes were dark, lips kiss-swollen when they pulled apart, and Andrea nodded, almost frantic for any touch on his heated manhood. "Straddle my shoulders, please." Andrea knelt over Gregory, gasping as Gregory reached up and gripped his hips, pulling him forward so Gregory could take Andrea's erect rod into his mouth. Gregory encircled the length of it with one hand, pumping while he sucked the tip, swirling his tongue around the crown, pressing an inch or so into his mouth, and flicking the tip of his tongue against the slick head. Gregory's other hand gripped the lush, rounded cheeks of Andrea's ass, and then slid around his hip to pet across the soft roundness of his belly. Gregory made a deep humming noise in his throat. The feeling through his velvety blade was good enough to make Andrea's eyes close and his toes curl. He could feel as Gregory shifted underneath him, rocking his hips and bearing down on the glass length inside him. Gregory made another noise, this time something between a whimper and a moan. And Andrea came, vision darkening around the edges, and hips jerking in Gregory's grasp as he pressed further into the hot, wet heat of Gregory's mouth. "Oh, God." Andrea rolled to one side, trying to get his breathing back under control. Gregory's hand went to his own cock, rubbing himself with short, frantic strokes, rocking his hips hard into the glass dildo in his ass until his entire body stiffened in climax. "Yes." Gregory's body went limp against the sheets, hand falling to his side as he grinned up at the ceiling. "That was amazing." "Really quite good." Andrea was grinning himself, he found, and rolled over to curl against Gregory's side. After a few minutes of comfortable silence, Andrea crawled to the edge of the bed and walked to wash himself off at the basin. He turned in time to see Gregory ease the toy out of his body, and then also stand, bringing himself and the glass phallus over to the wash basin. Andrea went back to the bed, stripping off the soiled sheets and putting them in the wicker basket to be laundered, before pulling the blankets back onto the bed and curling beneath them. His limbs felt heavy, but comfortably so, his mind quiet. Gregory came and curled beside him, moving so close they fit together, one around the other. "Are you going to sleep?" "Eventually, probably." Andrea let his eyes close and concentrated on the weight of Gregory's arm around his middle. After a moment, Gregory rolled away from him and then back, and when Andrea looked over his shoulder, he saw Gregory had a book propped against his knees. "What are you reading?" "Passion's Secret." Gregory grinned over at him. "Another novel of the scandalous and racy type. It's about a young duke who is having a secret affair with his best friend and fencing partner, who, unfortunately, is untitled. Then the duke becomes engaged to the heir of another noble house, who turns out to be of a cold and standoffish disposition. But after a series of missteps and misunderstandings, the three admit their feelings for each other, and end up all in a love relationship. There is this amazing scene where all three go horseback riding in the woods that I must read to you. You will like it, I promise." Gregory's grin transformed into a smirk. "The author speaks about sex the same way you do." They had technically only been involved in a relationship of a romantic nature for a few hours, Andrea thought. But already the desire to smother Gregory with a pillow was strong. Instead, he curled himself against Gregory's side, head on his shoulder, as Gregory opened the book and began to read.
I have received a letter from Emily.
Indeed. Andrea could hear Gregory moving around the room, even though he did not look up from where he sat curled, already in bed with a book propped on his knees. The little city apartment was a halfway point, not Gregory's manor house or Andrea's tiny boarding room accommodations at Colleen. It was a compromise of sorts, a place where they could lay aside their baggage and just be together. It was not large and not fancy, but it was adequate, and filled with Gregory's star charts and Andrea's antique books. There was fencing gear spread across the sitting room at the moment, with a stack of romance novels beside the hearth, and more pens and bottles of ink than any two people should ever have need of. Emily says there are whole excavation parties there, that they are digging up the bones of huge creatures buried far beneath the great desert, creatures with long tusks, claws, and even wings, the likes of which no longer exist. Interesting. Andrea put his book down and looked up to see Gregory standing a few feet away from the bed, naked, toweling his hair dry. Isn't it? Gregory grinned, and Andrea pulled his eyes away from the water droplets, still making their slow way down along the auburn hair that fanned across Gregory's chest. I was thinking how exciting and interesting it would be for us to go there and participate in these excavations firsthand. Andrea rolled his eyes at that. Of course Gregory wanted to throw himself at something new and intellectually exciting. You already have two disciplines of academic research to participate in. You do not need another. Just because you have always been happy studying ancient languages and literature, and will probably die happily doing just that, doesn't mean some of us can't have more varied interests. Gregory let the towel drop to the floor and slid into bed, curling his long body around Andrea's. He rested his chin on Andrea's shoulder, his hand sliding down and underneath Andrea's nightshirt. I cannot simply leave for the great desert. I have my own research to do. Andrea was most certainly not going to get distracted by Gregory's wandering hands and let him win that way. You can do translation just as well in a tent. Gregory's wandering hand petted across his chest. And I'm sure Sasha would be more than happy to have your office all to himself for an extended period of time. Besides, Gregory kissed him on the cheek, his mouth lingering close enough that Andrea could feel Gregory's warm breath against the curve of his ear. I know you want to see the skeletons of these ancient creatures just as much as I do. Andrea's lips curled up in a smile. If you want to convince me to leave my research and go live in a tent in the desert while you dig up bones, you are going to have to try harder than that. He didn't have to see the wide grin that spread across Gregory's face to know it was there. Well then, Gregory kissed him again. I will enjoy the challenge.
We hope you have enjoyed this audiobook presentation of A Matter of Disagreement by E.E. Ottoman. This production was narrated by Michael Stellman. For more stimulating book titles, visit lessthan3press.com. Production copyright 2015 by Less Than 3 Press. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.